Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission each week is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, and business people that I can find. And these people are very excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice with us each week. And more importantly, they're willing to share their backstory, how they got where they are right now, because I think that's just so, so important. How did they do it? Why did they do it? And how can we follow along and possibly do it ourselves? So today I welcome to the show Lynn Rankin-Esker. Lynn is an award-winning researcher, a psychologist, and author. Her young adult book, My Paperback Cape, I love that title, My Paperback Cape, The Unlikely Odyssey of a Bookworm, was a 2014 finalist in the San Francisco Writers Conference Contest. And by the way, that book is free today on Kindle, and I'm going to get her to share that with you. In addition to writing fiction, Lynn is the author of numerous academic journal articles and book chapters in the area of intimate relationships. She has degrees from Bucknell University and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and she has completed a postdoctoral fellowship at Stanford's Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Medicine and was on the faculty of Pepperdine University for 4 years. A fascination with why people do what they do, coupled with a lifelong love of reading, which is why we get along so well, led Lynn to her current career as an author. Her current young adult book was written as a sort of support letter to her teenage self and all of the other teenage girls who are longing for direction but not getting it from the adults around them. Her clinical practice focused on working with anxiety disorders, depression, and intimate relationships. Lynn, good morning. I feel like I'm just kind of have to sit at your knee and learn from you. Good. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, good morning. I'm so happy to be here, too. And you know, especially with a kindred spirit of somebody who loves to read. That's an immediate connection for me with people.
I know. I read and read and read. I've got something like 3,000 books, physical books, that I've been collecting. I do. They're actually in my garage. Lynn, you should see my garage. One complete wall is ceiling-to-floor bookcases.
Oh,
in my
God.
Garage of all places.
I'd be in heaven.
I am.
I've decided,
and then, of course,
I've
got that mini on my my Kindle, too. So, yeah.
I think I've got one of my key. I'm sorry. That was one of my Kia's best customers because I keep buying new bookshelves to put my new books. I just fill them up and then start in the next room and put a new bookshelf and fill it up.
I know. Do you know, I don't know why this is important to say, but I actually removed my big dresser out of my bedroom. Because I just didn't need that many drawers for socks. I just didn't. And I replaced it with bookcases, leaning bookshelves. So
I love it.
My socks are in my closet.
You have to know
what's important.
Exactly.
Well, listen, tell people a little bit about yourself. You've got a fascinating backstory. And, I mean, you're this very accomplished person. Mm-hmm. You're a psychologist. You're an author. Tell people a little bit more about yourself that I might have missed in the intro.
Well, you know, I think my first love was reading, and probably like a lot of people who love to read, when I was a kid, as soon as I knew how to write, I thought, well, I'm going to write little stories, and I just always enjoyed that and thought about pursuing writing as a career, and for various reasons didn't initially, which I think actually has worked out for the best because you have to be very self-directed. It's a little lonely. You have to, you know, be able to take rejection, and I think all the things I did before pursuing that really kind of helped me get to that point. So, you know, I've always been curious about why people do what they do and how relationships work. I'm one of those girls who obsessed for hours with her girlfriends. Why did he say that? What did he do? What did he mean? You know, just I could do that forever. So
did you finally figure out that you'll never know?
Well, you know, I figured out enough of it to get a great husband and have that really, you know, fingers crossed. I always laugh at the hubris of people who talk about how great their relationship is publicly, but I think I figured out enough to make that work. So I don't know if I have every answer, but just that curiosity, I think, feeds both into writing and loving reading and into psychology. So I ended up pursuing a career in psychology, which has just been fascinating and did answer at least enough questions that I feel like I've figured out how to have a pretty reasonably happy life and good marriage and all that. So, and that career in and of itself has so many options. I'm all about kind of finding careers that are flexible, and I talk to my kids about that, you know, as a psychologist, you can be on a faculty, you can teach, you can see clients, you can consult, you can write. I mean, there's just a million ways to make that work. So I enjoyed all that tremendously. And then I just reached a point where I felt like that novel that had been in my head forever was dying to get out. And I approached my husband because I think it's part of any new business endeavor, and that's sort of what this is. You have to have a financial plan. And I gave him a budget for how it would work if I took time off from my paid work to write, and he agreed. And we jokingly called it an Esker grant. I was on an Esker grant and really just got a chance to dive into writing and making things up and creating. The research writing I had done in the past it's a very different kind of writing. You're trying to kind of quantify reality, and you write it down in a very specific sort of protocol, and that's fun and challenging, but creative writing is a whole different ballgame. I wanted to make up reality. So I feel just lucky that, you know, I've been able to follow several passions, and as you and I have discussed before, I think we're in a world now where people will have multiple careers and go different directions.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't really know where that bend in the road is going to take you, but it's very exciting.
Yeah, we were discussing that in my virtual green room, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, when anybody over 30 can probably recall that basically your parents or your grandparents, they got a job straight out of high school or before they even finished high school, working at the railroad or the box factory or wherever it was. They stayed in that job forever and ever, amen, until they retired, got their pension, and pretty much went home to die. I mean, it was boring.
Yeah.
And we don't do that anymore. I mean, it is not at all uncommon to have multiple careers or career paths, you know, during a lifetime now, and nobody thinks anything of it. Where it used to be, if you had a resume with all these multiple things on it, you were pretty much unemployable. Now you're interesting.
It's so odd
how things change.
It is. I just was on a panel. They some Girl Scouts put together a whole panel of women who do different jobs. They wanted to hear all about jobs. And there were six of us, and the girls had just these fabulous questions. But one of them was, have you had previous jobs or careers? Only one person there was doing the same thing she'd always wanted to do, and she was a veterinarian. And she said she just had always wanted to do it. She never did anything else. But every single one of us on the rest of the panel had done multiple things.
Oh, yeah, me too. I mean, I always knew that I was going to be my own boss. I mean, I'm given my personality, that's a must. It has to be. But, yeah, and that's as far as I'm going to go with that. But I always knew that I was going to somehow, before there was even an internet, it's funny what you know. I knew I was going to make a living with my $3,000 boat anchor computer that didn't have internet because it didn't exist.
Wow.
But I just knew that somehow I did. And I invested in this thing, and I spoke DOS for the longest kind of time.
Oh, my goodness.
I was such a nerd. I still can to some degree. But, you know, but all during that time while I was waiting for the internet to be created for me, I had multiple careers. And all of them practically were me owning my own business. So, you know, it's just, it's a great way to live. You learn so much as you go.
It's
from
so
spot
true.
To spot. I mean, you're not stagnant, I don't think.
It's true. You have to have courage. I think some people still have the old model in their head for get a job and stick with it, and it's a little scary sometimes, I think, to take off towards something that's your passion, but it's not as clear how that will work out. But it's so worth the risk, I think.
Well, and these days, Lynn, with job insecurity is a huge problem. It didn't used to be. But these days, you can pretty well just figure out that you've got to have something else going on the side just in case your job goes away or you're downsized or, you have an illness. I mean, there are just so many variables. So I think entrepreneurship is really very much on the rise for a variety of reasons. Do you see that?
Yes. Oh, gosh. In my own family, I see that. You know, my husband is the baseball coach at UC Berkeley. And as some people would be aware, the baseball program got dropped several years ago. They cut five sports.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So that was in 2010, the 2010-2011 year, and they said this will be your last year. And it, so, of course, I mean, he's in an even more sort of volatile kind of job than a lot of people, that, that coaches can be fired or let go, or in his case, the actual program was dropped. And so you do really need to be flexible. And what happened with that, the short version, is the alumni and everybody went crazy raising money, and they brought the program back. They raised like $9 million in a matter of weeks.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. And then the team ended up in the College World Series that year. I mean, it was just a storybook year. It was unbelievable. Mm. It was a roller coaster ride. But certainly that speaks to always knowing kind of in the back of your mind, what else would I do? What else am I interested in? Having a set of skills that, that you know you could use. Although my husband's such an electronics fan, his plan was to work at Best Buy. Because he loves being around electronics.
What do they call that, the Geek Squad or something?
Yeah.
Or is that the wrong store?
Yeah. I'm not sure, but he's like, well, I know I love TVs and all that
stuff. There you go. So he wasn't distraught. He was going to go in another career direction. I love that.
Well, actually, what you know, he was just that year so focused on trying to save the program, dismantle the program, and help his players and win games all at the same time. Because at the time, he was helping his players find other schools in case they needed to transfer. And it was a crazy year. But he's still the program is still there, and he's still coaching, and it's been great.
Well, that's a great success story. I love that the community just said, no, we're going to fix this.
Yeah, it was, I mean, just some extraordinary alumni put in amazing amounts of time beyond their regular jobs and really got just so organized. And it, basically what they're doing is endowing the program, so it will always be self-sufficient financially.
Nice. Well, let's switch back to you, and thank you for sharing that story, because I love to hear things like that where the community rallies together or the alumni rallies together and says, look, you know, there are other ways. We don't have to just take this as done. We can find a way around it, over it, blow it up. We can find a way, and I love that kind of
story. Exactly,
So, Lynn, how long did you take off from work? Are you back in your practice now, or are you still on your hiatus?
I have not gone back to my practice. It was supposed to be a year, and it ended up stretching to probably what's been 5 or 6 years now, which is another thing I think people learn about when they make a business plan, which is you probably have to double or triple the time you think things will take. But I've just enjoyed the writing so much, and I'm working on my next book already, and it just worked out with our children and some needs that our family had, that it was better for me to have that time to take care of what they needed. And you know, I think at this point I could go back to seeing clients, but I am just so involved in my latest book that I'm not really thinking that's something I'm going to do just yet.
There you go. You follow your heart. As I mentioned at the top of the program, your book is free today on Kindle. Tell people where they can find that.
Yes. So if they just go to Amazon.com and type in Lynn Rankin Esker, so it's Rankin with a hyphen, then E-S-Q-U-E-R, or they can find it on my website, which is also LynnRankinEsker.com. But probably the easiest is just to go straight to Amazon, and it's right there in the Kindle store. And, yes, thank you for mentioning that. It is free today.
I downloaded
it. Excited to have – oh, good. Fun to have people have a chance to try it out. And I know that I – when I first discovered sort of this way that a lot of authors get their names out there, which is, you know, they put their books on for free for a day or here and there, I tried a couple authors who I never would have heard of or thought of and loved their stuff and just thought, well, what a great way to be able to try somebody out and see if you like what they do.
Well, if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter or any of the social media at all, you'll find that I'm always posting free books, free Kindle downloads. I have on my Kindle.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. And I have on my Kindle well over 3,000 books. I mean, I read probably 5 to 6 books a week. I'm a speed reader. I you know, gather information quickly. But I'm always finding these great free books, and I'll share them. And they're only available for download for about 48 hours.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I rip through them. They can be business books. They can be recipe mm-hmm. books. They can be your book. I don't care. I'm downloading that book. I'm going to read it.
I love it.
But
what have been your favorites?
You know, I love business books.
Uh-huh.
I really do. But if I read any kind of a novel at all, and I'm there, it's murder uh-huh. mysteries. I'm addicted to murder
yeah.
mysteries.
I love them.
I mean, addicted.
Too.
I kill people in my sleep all of the time. You know, I mean, I was reading Agatha Christie when I was a child, and Rex
uh-huh.
Stout, and you know, all the English murder mysteries, and I love those kinds. So anytime I find what looks like it's going to be a decent murder mystery, I'll download that. But most novels I just kind of bypass because
uh-huh.
my business is, you know, I'm really interested in business. But
yeah.
I love to read. I read myself to sleep. I read when I wake up in the morning. And
mm-hmm.
it's just what I do for entertainment. But those free books, and we wanted to talk about this in the program mm-hmm. too, because it's a great way for authors
yes.
to get people to read the book, leave a review,
mm-hmm.
get to know you. So it's a smart, smart move on your part.
Yeah, well, you know, this whole world of self-publishing and digital publishing has been fascinating to me. I've just found it so interesting that really anybody can write a book and put it out there. And so we have such a chance now to just hear from so many voices and so mm-hmm. many creative people that might have gotten stuck in the bottleneck of traditional publishing. And it's just amazing, too, how word spreads. You know, somebody reads it and likes it, and they go on Goodreads, and they tell people about it. And so
right.
you are kind of really able to find the types of books that you like. I just think it's fascinating.
It is. And on top of that, you started your own publishing company and published your
yes.
book yourself.
Yes.
Tell us about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, well, I feel really fortunate that this is the time in history that I decided that I wanted to write a book and publish it, because the options now that are available were never before. And when
mm-hmm.
I first wrote the book, I've revised it several times. I've gone to writing groups and meetings and all sorts of things to get good feedback on it. Initially, I thought I'd go the traditional publishing route, like I think almost everybody in the past has done. And that's a long process. I submitted
it
a number
is.
Of places.
Like a couple of years.
At least. I had one
yeah.
publisher interested, and ultimately she turned it down. And then my husband said, you should just self-publish it while you're still trying to get it published the traditional way. I said, you know, I think people really are doing that. And it turns out
mm-hmm.
I have a friend who also self-published a book recently, and we discussed it. And I started my own publishing company, put it out there. And the more I have researched traditional publishing versus self-publishing, I think I'm going to stick with this, even if I did get an offer from traditional publishing. Just there's a lot of pluses both ways, certainly. I mean, for a lot of people, the traditional way is still the way to go. They get a team of experts who are going to edit and find cover art
right.
and promote it and distribute it. But for people like me, and it sounds like maybe that you're this way too, I love being my own boss. I love figuring
yep.
out new things.
I want to do it my way.
I like the control I have over. I already had somebody who's a great editor, so she edited my book. I had somebody I knew who's a children's book illustrator, so she did the cover art. I just feel like I kind of had that team of experts around me already. And I like the control that I have. You can have it, when you publish it, goes immediately instead of waiting like a year for it to come out
mm-hmm.
if a traditional house had purchased it. So, and then the royalty rate is vastly different. Probably in the traditional publishing world, you make about 15% of the book sales, of the cost of the book. And the way I've done it, I will make 70%.
Hmm.
So it's a
now,
pretty significant difference.
It is, and you have control. And if it's on Kindle, you can also, and I've seen this a lot, you know, I'll get a notice that says, this book has been updated. Well, good, because it had a lot of errors. Let's see how it looks now.
Exactly.
I have read books. I read one the other day. It was part of a box set from an author I really, really like.
Uh-huh.
And the second book in it was so riddled with errors that it was unreadable. The
oh,
books,
goodness.
But it was sandwiched in between two great books. And I was like, I
uh-huh.
can't read this. I can't. Would you please fix it? I can't read
yeah.
this. So, you know, that's one of the beauties. But I interview a lot of authors and speakers on this program, and I work
uh-huh.
with a lot of them in my day job, which is, you know, as an
mm-hmm.
online business manager and web developer. And what I found over time is basically what you're saying is that if you go the traditional route, these days I'm being told that they just don't have the money. The publishing houses simply do not want to take you if you don't already have a platform, meaning your social media is out there. You've got your social proof that people are following you, that you're on the, you're on the speaking circuit. So it's tough to get a book to a publishing house these days, unless you're established.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I don't want to sort of say that publishing houses aren't great, because I think for authors who have their platform, and I think it works so fabulous for them. But I think the good news is that for those of us who either don't get in that way or choose to go a different way, there is a whole new way to publish and to get your work out there. And I was reading kind of a discussion on this that a couple guys who have gone the self-publishing way route and who've done extremely well in it were saying, you know, that one of the suggestions or criticisms of self-publishing was, well, there's going to be so many books out there, and how do people find it? And they said, well, look at YouTube. I mean, everybody puts stuff up there, and the stuff that's really good rises to the top, and people find it, and it goes viral. Mm-hmm. So really, there is a process by which we all can find what's the good stuff out there.
Well, social media is certainly important, I mean, a very important part of any platform. You've got to be out there talking about it, you know, discussing it, making sure people get it in their hands one way or another. So, yeah, it's a very much changed process. Listen, writing a novel is a big process. I mean, you started some years ago and you've managed to really work it into your life and your family, which is fascinating. But what strategies did you use to complete your first book?
Yeah, well, so this is where being
especially
a,
with kids
really
kind
of came
in
handy.
How did you do that?
So my style of therapy as a psychologist is called cognitive behavioral. And so the behavioral piece of it, which is just really strategies for how you, you know, get things done, was very helpful. And so in the behavioral world, if you have what's called a long duration behavior or a big task, a big long task that you know you're not going to get done in one day, you break it into pieces and then you reward yourself for getting those pieces done. So lucky for me, I have a TJ Maxx nearby and I love Lemonheads. So I reward myself for like setting small goals that are doable and achievable, and then once those are done, really feeling like you celebrated that or got a reward for it or something, and that allows you to kind of keep working on something for a long time. And that's true whether it's doing your taxes or cleaning out your garage or, you know, whatever. So I think that was very
helpful. I buy shoes.
Yes, there you go. And I also
I take it back. Once a month, if I've had a really good month and I've met all my goals, I will go to Ideally and I will buy myself like a, you know, a really, I have a bag fetish, you know, Dooney and Burke or a Coach bag or something. So I will buy myself a really nice, you ought to see my closet, it's obscene. If I could move in there, I would.
It could be rationalization, but I think it is actually an effective strategy for getting things done. Mm-hmm. And one of the other things I did was I had what I called a changing definition of success. So at first, I had a sign on my book that just said, finished equals success. Like, just get it done. Mm. And when it was done, then it was edited equals success. And then uploaded equals success. And now promoted equals success. So you just, you know, you have to think, like, what is the success going to be at this moment? And it can't just be perfection from the beginning, because you'll never get it done.
And let's talk about that, because so many people, and I've been guilty of this, so many people say, well, it's just not ready.
Yes.
And my attitude is, pull the trigger. It's the internet. Yes. You can change things on a dime now.
It's very true. Yeah, you have to. Yeah. It's hard, because you need to strike a balance of feeling like you really have done good work and it's ready to get out there. But you're right. You have to get to a point where you go, okay, it's time to put it out there, let it go, pull the trigger, however you want to say it. And as you mentioned, since you can fix the errors or the problems, it, you know, maybe allows you to let go just a little bit more.
But, it does, you know, I'd be curious, is there a psychological tidbit that you can offer for people who just sit on these great, because I talk with people all the time, you know, I mentor VAs and virtual assistants, and they're like, okay, I'm building my sales page, but I'm just not ready. Well, are you ready to go broke because you're fixing to?
Right. Well, there's probably two ways to do it. Either one where you gradually expose yourself to the thing that's scary. So if you have to give a sales pitch, you just give it to a small group. Or somebody that doesn't, you know, you're not going to be as upset if they don't like it. But the other thing is, I love the writer Anne Lamott saying that what other people think of me is none of my business. If you can just, because I think that's what makes people fearful to put something out in the world. They're afraid of what may come, the criticism or people not liking it. And I mean, I know when I uploaded my book, I felt like I was walking around naked. It just feels like so much of me is in there. It just is, it feels very, like you put your most intimate stuff out into the world. And you just have to kind of be ready, like, to think what other people think of me is none of my business. Me following my dream is my business.
Right. The first time I ever heard that term was Larry Winget. Do you know who Larry Winget is?
No.
He's written 6 New York Times bestsellers. He calls himself the world's first irritational speaker. You don't want to ask him a question you don't want the answer to. You really don't. He will tell you which way the corn grows.
Oh, that's great.
I love Larry, and I love his books. And one of the very early interviews I did with him, he mentioned that, and I just sucked in wind. It was like, oh, I always knew that that was my life philosophy, but I was never able to put it into a cogent sentence. And I went, oh, my God. Uh-huh. It was brilliant because I don't care what people think because I'm not thinking their thoughts. I'm thinking mine.
Right. But it's very hard to get to that point for a lot of people. I mean,
I was born that way.
Yes. Well, I have an almost teenage daughter, and it just is reminding me of how much, especially at that age, you care so much about what everybody else thinks. It just, we have to almost train that out of ourselves after we go through adolescence.
Really? See, I never
Which,
had
for my
problem.
Money, is the hardest time of life.
Yeah, I do remember that. It was tough, but I think it was tougher for the people around me than it was for me. at least that's what I'm told anyway.
Yeah.
Listen, let's talk about the basic premise of your book because I downloaded it this morning.
Uh-huh.
I haven't had a chance to really read it.
Sure.
Let's talk about the book and what would somebody get out of reading it as a teenager or as an adult?
Mm-hmm. So the basic story is it's a 14-year-old girl. Her name's Jacqueline Carson, and she's just moved with her family to a new town. And her mom is depressed, and at first she just really can't figure out why, so she's having a hard time, and her parents' marriage is not doing so well. And then she's at school, and there's a bunch of mean girls, so she can't find her place. She can't really find help from the adults around her, but she loves to read. So what she ends up doing is taking on the personality characteristics of her favorite fictional characters. So she pretends to be brave, she pretends to be confident, she pretends to be self-sufficient, and by pretending to be these things, she actually grows them in herself, kind of unravels the mystery of her mom's depression and helps sort out what's going on in the family and kind of ends up triumphing over mean girls and finding her way. And my sort of goal in writing it was, as a therapist, I know that obviously if somebody's having a hard time, they go to a therapist, it can be helped. But a lot of people don't get to a therapist.
I know.
What would you do on your own if nobody around you was able to kind of help you? There are some ways that people find their way through difficult times, and this was one way.
So, and how long did it take you to write this book?
It took me a year the first time, and then, of course, the learning curve was pretty steep. I showed it to another writer, and she said, "Oh, it's 3 times too long." I rewrote it several times, and it was each time I think I felt like I was learning, so I was still enjoying the process. But I did reach the point where I thought, "Okay, it's done, and it's ready to go." So it probably took 4 or 5 years. I'm hoping my next one will be much faster now that I've sort of learned the ropes.
Now, is it done, or can you serialize it?
I first wrote it as a single book, but as people have read it, especially some of my friends, they all keep wanting to know what's happening to her next. So
that's what I was wondering, she's a kid. She's going to grow up.
Exactly. So after I finish the one I'm working on now, which is also another young adult book, and I should say my book has some mature content, so I would say definitely 14 years of age or older should read it, not any younger than that. So I think I may go back and revisit Jacqueline and see what she's doing next after I finish my current book.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you have any means of knowing who your current readership is? Is it – who's downloading this book? Can you tell?
I can't tell yet. I can't. I'm – I'm waiting to see what might show up as reviews on Goodreads or Amazon to see if there's some sense of the age. I think, you know, initially it went out to my female friends, and a number of them read it just because they're my friend, and then they said, oh, my gosh, I love it. You shouldn't call it a young adult book only because everybody remembers what it's like to be a teenager. And there are a lot of young adult books that cross over into the mainstream or into, you know, regular adults. You don't want to call them old adults because they're not old.
Come on now.
You know, adults of, you know, over the age of 20
30.
Or whatever. It's not completely clear to me yet who's going to be the biggest readership, although it was initially meant for teens, and I'm trying to get it out to teens and get their opinions on it.
Yeah, I'd be very curious to know. Once you find out, you've got to call me and tell me.
Okay.
I'm dying
know.
To know. But, you know, I mean, you're right about the young adulthood, because I remember, this is how arrogant you are when you're very young. I remember I was 19 years old, I think, and I was at a birthday party for a girl who had just turned 23.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I didn't know her. I was there with a friend, and, you know, just one of those very loosely held things. And she said, oh, yeah, I'm 23 today. And in my arrogance at 19 years old, I remember looking at her and thinking, she looks good for her age. Oh, my God. I'm telling you, our brains are not formed at that age.
It's so funny. It's funny. The older you get, the more your numbers adjust in your head.
I know. So who knows who's – my point is that my point is, who knows who's reading this book?
It's true.
I'd be very curious to know.
I would be curious to find out, and when I get some real numbers on it, I'm happy to let you know. But it also reminds me that, you know, I think we all have an age we feel inside, and as we age, that gets more and more distant from what we look like on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I – was on internship, and I was working with some older adults, and I had a woman I worked with who was 77, and she told me that she was often crying, and I said, why are you crying?
Oh.
She said, well, I look in the mirror, and I see this old lady, and that's not how I feel inside. And I said, how old do you feel inside? And she said, I've never felt older than 25.
25?
And so I started asking people how old they feel inside, and it's just fascinating that I don't think I've gotten many answers over 40, no matter whether the person was 70 or 50 or whatever. I feel like I'm not much older than 35.
See, I'm not even 35. Some days I'm 2, and most days I'm about 30. Just depends. I mean, it doesn't matter. Each year I'm still 30 years old. That's just all there is to it, by golly. But that's how old I feel.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I had never thought of it. No, not at all.
You know, I'm not saying I'm trying to pretend not to be my age, which is 50, but inside, like, if you weren't really thinking about your age, I think we all have a different feeling inside than we have chronologically.
Yeah, we do. I'll tell you, when it really bothers me is if I'm in the backyard digging and, you know, dealing with my tools of destruction, because I like to dig holes.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, like, oh, man, now I know I'm not 30. Owie.
Yeah, sometimes we do get reminders, huh?
Yeah, we do. And it's almost always physical. It's never emotional or mental. It's always like, dang, that hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah,
gotcha. Yeah, so I think my book will appeal to the teenager and a lot of people, regardless of what the age they actually are.
Right. Well, listen, if you had to go back in time, since we're talking about teenagers, what advice would you give to your teenage self if you could go back in time, if you could send advice back then and say, okay, you know, I know where you're going, but here's some things you're going to encounter. What's going on?
You know, if I could give myself any advice back then, I'd say, you're going to be fine. It'll be fine. This stuff works out. You will be fine. It will all be fine. You'll find your way. And I think what happens in my book with my character, Jackie, is she discovers that everybody has struggles inside. You know, everybody has a story and something that is hard for them. And we don't always see that. We compare our insides to other people's outsides. And what she discovers is she could have compassion even for people who might be mean, or particularly people who are being mean or bullies, because probably something's happening to them that's making their life hard. So some compassion for other people, and then just a reassurance I would give myself that it's going to be fine and you're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. That's a good
kind
message
of as
because,
that.
Yeah, I find that the meaner people are, the probably more they need your empathy. Not necessarily
exactly.
Sympathy. I tend to give them a wide berth, but
Yes.
You know, I do feel bad for them because it's got to be nasty to be that ugly all the time.
Well, something just is painful inside. And that's part of what drove me into psychology, too, is thinking if I just knew a person's story, I'd probably understand why they're acting the way they are. If you just knew what the influence has been in their life or what had been hard for them or whatever, you probably – and it's not okay for them to behave badly, but you would understand it.
Right. Well, let's backtrack a bit and talk about your publishing company. I would love to know how that came to be and what the steps were.
You know, actually pretty simple. The more I read about self-publishing and looked at it, I said I really want to completely own everything. There are places you can upload your book and they sort of serve as a publisher, but then they literally get listed as the publisher. You know, they're just websites that kind of help take care of that kind of stuff for you. And I thought, well, I just really want to own the whole thing. And so I just came up with a name. And this part kind of cracked me up, at least where I live. If you start a company that's not does not have your name in the title, you have to submit a request for a fictitious business with a fictitious name.
Like a DBA or really?
Yeah, and so it sounded
yeah, but
so
that's California.
California. That I had to submit, I think it was called something like that, something about a business with a fictitious name, which sounded sort of like it was illegal.
It sounds sketchy, doesn't it?
But, so I came up with Exandel Press. It's named after the initials of my kids. And it was really very pretty simple. I submitted for the name and, you know, a few fees here or there, and done. It's mine. And I think the rest of it is just learning what a publisher does, how you promote the book, how you distribute the book, where you get it out to. And from what I understand, a lot of authors have to kind of figure a lot of that stuff out anyway.
They do. It's tough.
Promotions
because,
that you're doing
like,
on your own.
Yeah, there's a lot of learning curves, and I wish there was some kind of clearinghouse that – well, I take that back. I do have some friends who are working with authors and speakers and walking them through the process.
Yeah.
And every process is different. Some are just Kindle. Some are, you know, Create Space. Some are – every process is different.
Yeah. Well, lucky for me, that whole thing is fascinating to me. So I feel like, I get to learn a whole new industry, and I get to kind of have the say over what the cover of my book looks like and when it's out and how much it costs. And so that's all really interesting to me. I can imagine there are authors who just really want to sit and write their books, and so it's nice for them to have somebody else who can help take care of those details. But for me, it was kind of fun to feel like I'm the publisher. I'm in charge.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you take on clients, or is this strictly just for your book?
Right now, it's for me, although I keep kind of running into and talking to other authors, and I kind of feel like, well, once I have a sense of how it all works in my head, I'd be kind of sort of interested in maybe taking some of them on. So we'll see how that develops.
Yeah, I'm always curious how these businesses just kind of spring up out of a need. And again, that's that entrepreneurship thing.
Yeah. Yes, it's so interesting because it's not even like if you'd asked me when I was younger, I might have said, yes, I'll be a writer someday or I'll write a book. I would never have imagined learning this much about how it all works and being part of it and starting a publishing company. But now I'm really excited that it happened. So you do have to kind of keep your mind open for what could happen around the things that you like to do.
Right. And here's the thing. I mean, if you're going to do something like this, you might as well dive into it all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to be educated on if you do hand over parts of your book to a different editor or to a different publishing house, you need to be educated because you can lose your rights to your own work. I mean, very easily if you're not careful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy to get up there and get published these days, but you've got to know what you're doing. You've got to know the legalese, and too many people don't go that deep into it. They're like, oh, I got a book. Let's get it out there. And then they find out that they don't really own much of it anymore. It's very sad.
Oh, it would be heartbreaking.
Yeah, wouldn't it? I mean, that would just, I'd be out stomping tires somewhere.
Yes.
Okay, so being a psychologist, what did you bring from that career into writing this book? I think we covered a bit, but is there anything that we might have missed that's important?
Well, certainly just that it was helpful to know how to have the process, you know, the actual shedding up of my time and valuing the time and, mm-hmm. you know, breaking it down into small pieces and all that. But also just, you know, my years of working with intimate relationships and families and depression and all of that sort of finds its way into the book. And just, you know, I think a lot of authors, like some of the really just great authors where you get so involved in their book, they have an understanding of human behavior and why people do what they do and how relationships work and why people can, you know, fall so far short of things. And so all of that, just the human condition and understanding that, I feel like it found its way into the book and the way that the family operates. And, you know, my character Jackie just decides that people are not telling the truth in her family, which I think happens in many, many families, where there's just areas you're not supposed to talk about. You know, you don't right. mention the uncle's alcoholism or somebody's depression, or you just sort of tiptoe around it. And my character kind of says, you know, nobody's going to get better if we don't talk about this. And so right. just some of the things that I've seen as a psychologist and helped people work through, I feel like kind of got fictionalized and put into the book.
It's a fascinating story. I mean, I'm just listening to you going, wow, I wish I could. I'm like you. I always had a book. I've got several mm-hmm. books in me. They just haven't made it out yet.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I posted on Facebook a couple of weekends ago, listen, I'm, you know, working on my book today, and so far I have I have created the epic blank page. I mean, I couldn't come up with anything. I mean, it was epic. It was a blank page. It was gorgeous.
Yes.
And I never got off of that blank page. I actually went
yes.
outside and played with the dog.
There are many ways of what I call productive procrastination. I've gotten mm-hmm. lots of housework done trying to, when I couldn't come up with what to write for my book. But that kind of yeah. circles back to what I had told you at first. I just said, you know, changing a definition of success, which is the first mm-hmm. version of it, it's going to be imperfect. And
right.
you just have to, you know, spew out onto the page and know you'll fix it all later.
I didn't yeah. do that.
I
mean, it was a gorgeous blank page. I still got
yeah.
it. I printed it out.
Oh, yeah. Well, save it. I wish
I
could remember.
I think my cat spilled coffee on it.
Oh, no. There's a famous writer, and I can't remember who it was, but who was notoriously very slow and tortured in his writing, and one of his friends said, how did it go today? And he said, you know, I only got 5 words down. He said, 5 words, that's great for you. And he said, yes, but I don't know the order that they go in.
I think it was Rex. I don't know who that was, but I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to find out who it was.
Yeah.
I think it was Rex Stout, the Neuro Wolf creator,
uh-huh.
who dictated his books. I'm pretty sure it was him. He never wrote a word. He dictated
That could
them.
Work. That would work.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, honestly,
yeah.
that may be the route I take, because writing, and I'm sure you know this, you've noticed
uh-huh.
that speaking is very different from writing. You write
yes.
in a completely different manner. With
mm-hmm.
different verbiage than you would speak. And I'm thinking Evernote might be my friend. I don't know. But I'm thinking
yeah,
what I'll do is just speak it into my phone and then have it transcribed.
I think that would be a great way to go. It'd be fun to try
yeah.
that, just to see what happens when you speak it. Yeah.
Don't
well,
you think
I
it would be a very different?
yeah,
I
yes.
can write, but I'm a technical yes. writer more than anything,
uh-huh.
so...
Yeah.
I'm thinking speaking it, because I talk a lot when I'm on the radio, so I'm thinking that might work better for. I'm going to try it and see what happens.
I think you
but
should.
Don't you think it would be a very different kind of message if you speak it as opposed to writing it, or a different delivery
anyway? I think
it could
be. It'd be curious to see if it comes out the way you would have hoped. But
no,
I say
really.
Anything that gets you working on it, get some words down somewhere.
Mm.
I think that's the success.
I think so. Okay, let's go back to what you said much earlier at the top of the show, where you created these kind of systems for getting success. Can you walk our audience through some of the things that they can do that will get them some structure?
So structure for any kind of big, long project, is that
anything,
what you're talking about?
Yeah, anything.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, if you're starting a business or a book or something that's going to be a big, long project, first of all, I don't think you can ignore the financial cost of it. You know, if you're taking time off of work, or if you're just doing it on top of work, you know, you have to kind of plan for how that's going to work. Double or triple the time you think it's going to take, probably. Be ready to, like, not listen to people's criticism.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think just the structuring of it, the small doable pieces is just crucial, and a reward for that is important. And valuing your time. So there was a point where I'd say, okay, I'm going to set a schedule. I'm going to work from, you know, 9 to 12 on my writing. And I'd find that I was eating into that time. Oh, I'm just going to, I just dropped the kids at school. I'll just do a quick trip to the grocery store, you know. And what I decided was, if I was seeing a client during that time and they were paying me, I would never have cheated them a minute, not a minute. And so I just decided I would act as if I was the client, that this was a paid thing, whether it was not paid at that moment or not, that you really have to respect the time that you've set aside for that and not eat away at it at all. So I found setting a schedule, setting small goals that were achievable and were not about anything perfect is what helped me the most.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you find, because I find that I have highs and lows during the day. I know when I'm creative.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a very technical mind. You know, I have a computer science degree. I build websites. I have a very technical mind.
Mm-hmm.
I can get caught up in a website, and an hour later, I've realized that I've forgotten to drink water. I haven't moved, and I have a blinding headache. And then my creativity just gets up and leaves because I'm exhausted. So did you find, or did you have to determine what parts of the day that you're the most creative and build your schedule around that?
Absolutely. For me, it's in the morning. Like, you know, first thing when everybody's out, after everybody's out the door, it's when my brain is working creatively the best. And so the writing tasks get their schedule in right then. And then other things that you might have to do to keep up with it, let's say like I'm updating a Facebook page or something, that could be an afternoon job because that's not going to take the same kind of creativity. So, you're right. Finding the time of day that's best for you and setting that that time aside. And another thing I had read somewhere that really helped me was somebody called one of the great strategies of writing is butt glue, meaning put your butt in the chair and keep it there.
Ow. And see, I'm the opposite. I'm up every 15 minutes because I've got to refresh my oxygen intake. You know, I find
that
I'm looking at these screens, and, I mean, after a while, I'm not focused any longer. So I'm like a jack-in-the-box. I'm up and down all day long, but I get an enormous amount of work done because I take those three-minute refreshers.
Yes. Well, the refreshers are important, but I think what the butt glue was referring to is you get yourself into your office, right? You get yourself
right,
where
and
you
don't
need,
do something
to do
different.
Your work.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Exactly. So that's, I think the key is having a, if it's a writer, you have a spot that you have everything set up, at least for me, and you go to that spot every day. You sort of have, I've just trained my brain and body to go, okay, this is what happens now. And my old dog, who passed away a year and a half ago, and we have a new dog, so I'm very excited, but my old dog, if I delayed at all, would come and look at me. And she'd stand on the stairs. She'd say, come on, it's time to go. And she, because she walks up and lays in the office beside me while I'm working. And so she would be my reminder.
Oh. And how long did you write every day?
It
is. Well, I'll go back to that question in a second because I wanted to make an observation. But you're right. You have to go ahead and create that habit. You have to create that job. But you said something earlier that is so important. And I do this for my own social media. Because you had mentioned in the green room that I appear to have this social media empire.
Oh, yes.
I kind of do.
You do.
And the reason is because I treat myself as my own client. And I'm very good to my clients.
Exactly. I think a lot of us, if somebody's paying us or counting on us for something, we fulfill it completely. But when it's our own thing, we don't. And so you just have to pretend you're your own client.
You have to. And you have to treat your own businesses as well or better than you do your clients. I mean, you have to because you can't treat your clients well if you're not treating yourself well. It just doesn't work.
Yes. Exactly.
So how long do you set aside to work on your book?
Or
when you're writing
phase,
it, how long?
Yeah, what phase of a book I'm in. But ideally, 2 or 3 hours. And after three, you know, I don't feel like my brain is really helpful anymore in that regard. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, at first I set a word amount, like I want to get this many words down. And that was helpful for the first draft of just getting words, you know, getting things on the page. And then it was, when it was editing and stuff, it was sort of a period of time. So, you know, either the 2 or 3 hours. And that was, that works fine. You know, that helps me out just to have that time set aside for a while I had a little sign up that said no housework between 9 and 12.
Because,
you know, it's so easy to say, oh, I'll just go switch the laundry over to the dryer.
Yeah,
it seems like such
go,
a nothing little task,
right.
But it's taking your brain right out of where you need to be. And, in fact, you go put the laundry in the dryer, and then you notice that the light bulb needs to be replaced. So you change the light bulb, and, you know, and all of a sudden you're off and running.
I've done exactly the same thing, and that's why, I mean, I literally am scheduled within an inch of my life. You ought to see my calendar. I have exercise time built in.
Yeah.
I have, you know, meal times built in. I know what I'm going to be doing. And, of course, that it blows up because there's always something that's going to happen. But I know what I need to be doing in these blocks of time, so I don't chase squirrels. I mean, literally, my office is in my home. It is no big deal for me, or if I don't discipline myself to walk out and warm up my cup of tea and go, ooh, laundry, ooh, ooh, and then half an hour later, I'm like, ah, crud, you know, and I'm no longer focused on what I was when I walked out of my office, so it's very important to keep that focus and schedule that time.
I have a friend, her name is Monica McCarty, and if anybody reads romances, they would know her. She's a best-selling author of a ton of romances. They're really, really cool. And she had said one time, she goes, the greatest thing about being a writer is the flexibility, and the worst thing about being a writer is the flexibility.
The flexibility.
Yeah.
Trust me, I know. I had to go into my Google Calendar and say, Denise, discipline, discipline right now. Because I'd be out in the kitchen making gumbo and going, oh, crud. Running back to my office. So you do have to be careful with it. Okay,
but
so,
it's a good problem to have because it means you're your own boss.
It is, and I wouldn't change it for anything, but I have had to really exercise some self-discipline.
Yeah.
But you know, and this is interesting for those of you who are listening going, oh, my God, I don't want to be scheduled that tightly. If you schedule yourself properly and you really stay within the confines of that schedule, you would not believe how much time you free up.
It's
astonishing.
True.
It's absolutely astonishing. Okay, so who are some of the influences in your life?
Yeah, so of course my parents, great in so many ways, particularly with regard to reading. They bought me as many books as I wanted. They just, there was no, you know, they were careful with money maybe in other ways, but when it came to books, I was able to have whatever I wanted to read.
Right.
And the other thing that they both really taught me was that they both loved what they did for careers. And so they both kind of said, find something you love to do. Make sure you find something you love to do. And and that's a great message to get, especially when you're kind of in college and panicking about how you're going to make a living. And they really said, take your time and figure it out, you know, figure out what it is that you love. So they were great. I had some really amazing mentors. And I think mentors are just, if when you can find them, it's such a fantastic thing to have because – not only do they show you that somebody's doing what it is you want to do, they also believe in you and let you know that you're going to be able to do that. So my mentor in graduate school, Don Balcom, was just extraordinary. He had a great career. He had a great marriage. He had a great family. He was he's an amazing teacher, and he kind of showed me the way to do the things in my career that I wanted to do. So he was just extraordinary. And then, of course, it always comes back to books. Big influence in my life have been books, and particularly self-help books. I love self-help books. I think there's a lot of really good information out there, and people can find their way, even if they don't have a mentor or they don't have somebody around them to help them. The answers are out there if you look for them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Lynn, how do you consume books? There are so many ways these days. I have books. I love books. I love to crack them fine. I love to smell them.
Yes.
I've got antique books literally in my garage. I've got old Reader's Digest that I stole from my mother. Well, I didn't steal them. I relocated them from my mother's house. If she's listening, they're here if you want them, Mom.
But,
I mean, you know, the old Reader's Digest, one of my very favorite stories. Every Christmas I pull it out and read it is Merry Christmas, Mr. Baxter. It was written in the 50s. It's just a fantastic story. And I love to smell those books, but I also love my Kindle and reading on my iPad and reading outside. And, you know, but this is what happens now because I consume books in three separate ways. One is the hard copy. And if they're autographed by the author, I never touch them. There's a special place on my bookshelf, and I have tons of them. The other is, you know, if an author sends me their book, I will actually go and reorder the book so I can actually read it and annotate it. And then if I can, I'll get it on Kindle. And if there's an audio version, I'm in love. I will consume books three separate ways given half a chance.
Yes.
So are you going to do an Audible version of your book?
You know, I had not even thought of that yet. I probably will get to that point. Definitely. I think it'd be a fun thing to do. I love holding a book in my hand as well.
Me too.
A long time, I sort of resisted the digital readers because I just thought, oh, no, I love holding a book. And then when my eyesight started to get a little bad and I needed reading glasses at night and I read in bed, I thought, oh, if
I read in the tub and they fog up.
And so I have to open up
my e-reader and make it big, big text.
Yes, I get about 5 words a page because it's so big.
I'm not that bad.
No, it's probably a little more than that. But that's what really led me to try a Kindle. And I love the Kindle. I hear about a new book and I can have it in 20 seconds. That's just magical to me. When I was growing up, if you had told me, hey, someday you'll hear about a book and you'll just be able to, boom, have it in your hands, I would never have believed that. So,
I know.
And I like that you can transport it and pull it out of your purse in the car. So I read in the Kindle. I read on my phone if I forgot the Kindle, and I read the paperback and hardback copies of books too.
I've pretty much given up on my Kindle because now I read on my iPad. Love it, love it, love it.
I can't get the iPad away from my family, so I have to use it.
Well, you need to get one of your own and hide it.
Yes, that's true.
But you know what I've been doing, too? I mean, I'm like you with self-help books and business books. Mm-hmm. I love them. And, you know, I've got my little audible.com, subscription. I have found that if I'm listening to a book, because I listen to books while I'm working, I'm not one of those people that gets distracted. I can compartmentalize and I can listen and work at the same time. And I have gotten in the habit, and I can do this because I'm single, of taking my iPad to bed with me and listening to a book in my sleep. It's fascinating what I retain. Last night, I was listening. I don't know if you can try this because you're married, but maybe with earbuds or something. But last night I decided to listen to Loving What Is, Byron Katie.
Fascinating. One of the self-help books I love. Yes.
Fascinating. Yes. I was like, I woke up this morning and went, woohoo, and off I went. I'll tell you, if you like those kinds of books, you've got to get E-Squared.
E-Squared. I don't have that one. I love Martha Beck. I love Byron Katie. I have all sorts of authors that I love.
E-Squared by Pam Grout.
Okay.
You've got to grab that book. It is absolutely fascinating. And I couldn't get it on Audible, so I had to actually order the discs, which kind of irritated me because I had to wait for them to come in the mail, which is just unacceptable. But anyway, I now have them on CD.
I will definitely check that out. I'd love hearing about the
book. Oh, I think you'll be fascinated with it. It's energy experiments. It's absolutely fascinating book. Okay, so we are running out of time. What is your advice for someone just starting a long project, like a book or a new company? Are there any steps that you think they should start out with?
Well, aside from some of the things we've already said, set small achievable goals, reward yourself for those, disregard the idea of perfection that is your enemy at the beginning of any kind of long project. And I think one thing I didn't talk about yet, but find your tribe. Find the people who are doing what you like to do and talk to them about it. I found a group of other writers, and it's so great to be able to chat with them and find out what they're doing. And your tribe could just be online, but you need to find the people that will help you feel inspired daily. And also, there's going to be an excitement with starting, and when that fades, it doesn't mean you've picked the wrong thing to do or the wrong project. It just means it's time to get down to work.
Right. That is some really great advice. I'm going to send you, when we get off, I'm going to send you a blog that I follow for authors and speakers. It's fascinating. I mean, they have the best information for authors.
Oh,
it is
great.
Just great. And I can't remember the title of it right now, but I get their stuff in my email box every day. And I'm going there going, oh, my gosh. They give you information about apps and just different places you can go.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll send that to you, and I'll send you a link to the E-Squared book.
Sounds great. You have
been a joy. I've just really enjoyed speaking with you today. Thank you so much.
Oh, I appreciate it. I've had a great time, too. Really enjoyed speaking with you. So anytime.
Well, you are welcome back anytime. Well, listen, you gave our audience a glimpse into what it's like to be an author and a mother and a psychologist and just an all-around busy, happy person. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Well, listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Lynn Rankin-Esker. Lynn, tell people where they can find you one more time before we end the show.
Yes. So my website is lynnrankinesker.com, just LynnRankinesquer.com. It's probably the easiest place to find me. And then just Rankin-Esker on Amazon is where my book will be.
And be sure to download that. It's free today. For how long?
Today,
tomorrow?
Just for today. Just for today. There will be eventually other free promotional days, but for right now, it's just for today.
Good enough. Lynn, thank you. You have a fantastic day. And everybody, I will see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeonthewebcom or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.